Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Doug Show Live. This is the live stream that we do, or that I do, almost every week. I've been kind of missing a couple here in the summer with travel and whatnot, but we typically do it about once a week. I'm going to try to get more guests on, and today we have my friend Carl Broadbent, and you probably know him from his own YouTube channel. He is also the creator, the founder of Affiliate Gathering, I think the biggest conference in our niche site industry, where it's specifically focused on creators of niche sites, authority sites, whatever label you want to put on it. And I got to meet Carl about 10 months ago out in San Diego, Ezoic, through an event, and we met in person, got to hang out, share some drinks, have some meals together, all that kind of stuff. So Carl, how's it going today?
Hey, Doug. Yeah, fantastic. Thanks for inviting me on. I've not actually done a live stream for a while, so I'm actually excited to do this because, yeah, I've not talked to many people recently. So it's good to jump on your show. So yeah, thanks for the invite.
Very good. And this is a live stream, and we'll be taking a look over at the chat here and there. But I just want to let everyone know, we'll probably like save the questions until the end, but feel free to ask along the way. And if it happens to fit right into our conversation, we will get into it. And today we're going to kind of talk about really the state of the industry and a bit of a kind of a candid conversation. Like, we're just going to catch up. I was talking to Carl before we hit go live and record here, and he was just on vacation. I was on vacation. So we're kind of in the middle of the summer, and we were spending time with family and friends and that sort of thing. But we're going to talk about changes in the affiliate marketing industry in general. AI tools have been a very hot topic for the last 10 months. And I think, I'm not sure, but a couple of my friends have mentioned there's a little bit of a, there's less interest right now in ChatGPT and some of the AI tools, depending on who you talk to. And we're going to talk about working online in general, being productive, avoiding shiny objects and distracting you, and what it's like to start an event like Affiliate Gathering, which is a really a huge undertaking. So we'll get into all that kind of stuff. And before we get into it, Carl, can you let everyone know kind of your history? And, you know, you don't have to go super in depth, maybe about 2 minutes or so. How'd you get into niche sites and affiliate marketing? What'd you do before that? And what are you doing right now?
Yeah, sure. So it was about 5 years ago when I first started. I was working a corporate job. I was almost about to get signed off as like an area manager. So I've been training to do that for about 7 years. Everything looked good. I was being sent to various locations around the UK and even abroad to help run the company. And then one day I got pulled into an office and they just said, thanks very much. You've got 2 weeks notice. We're letting 20 managers go. And then just that was it. It was simple as that. I went home and I thought, okay, what am I going to do now? I'm going to have to do something else. And I just kind of sat at the kitchen table and thought, I don't want to join the corporate ladder again and do another 7 years to have this happen again. I want to be in control of my life. So I did what a lot of people do. I sat down at the computer, turned on YouTube and typed how to make money online. And luckily I came across a couple of people's YouTube channels that I was lucky enough to fall into the right hands, and that's how I look at it. It was Income School and it was Alex over at WP Eagle. And I started watching their content and they were talking about building websites, and I thought, okay, I'll have a go at this. And literally I sat at the kitchen table, and after about 4 hours of following one of Alex's tutorials, I made a website. I literally, my wife came in, I said, look at that website. She went, oh yeah, that's quite nice. I went, I've just made that. And it was literally from that moment on, I was kind of hooked. And then I got another did get another corporate job. I worked there for a year or so and my heart wasn't in it. And every minute I could rush home and work on my website, I did. And then about a year after doing that, I was lucky enough to win a competition from Income School, where they came to my house for 2 days and we had some, I had one-on-one tuition with them in my own home for 2 days. And it kind of blew my mind what was possible. They showed me examples, case studies. And from that moment on, that was it. You know, I kind of said to my boss, I'm giving you notice. I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to do this. And luckily enough, my boss was very supportive. So it took about 2 years before I was eventually could quit that job and do it full time. And I've been doing it full time now for, I'd say, 3.5 to 4 years.
That's a ridiculous story. Can you tell me the timeline again for when you got it seemed like a layoff, right? The first time around.
Yeah. Yeah. As a huge company, they just restructured, they franchised all their outlets, and basically the new franchisee didn't want the managers, the existing managers. So that was it. So I'd say it was just over 5 years ago when I sat down and watched Alex's video. It took me about a year to really kind of get to grasp with it and to actually win the income school competition. And then they came to my house. Then it was about 6 months after that. I think I was ready to quit. I was ready to do it full time then, but my boss kept me hanging on for an extra 6 months. He was really good. He said, show me what it's all about. I showed him it. You know, he made jokes about me, made fun about me. You know, he even pulled me up in an area meeting and put my website on screen in front of like 50 managers. And do you know what? There's the best thing he could have done, because it drove me. I was like, right, I'm showing you. He's like, oh, he's going to be the next Elon Musk. And I was like, I'm going to show you. And he said, right, I'll tell you what. He took me aside. He said, in 6 months, prove to me that you can earn the salary that you're earning now. And he said, no, actually, double it. You've got to be earning double your salary now. And I was a trader for a large company. So it was a decent salary. And sure enough, after 2 years from the start, I was earning enough to go into the office and say to him, there you go. That's what I made for on average for the last 6 months. And he went, all right, quit. Go for it. And that was it. And both him and my wife said the same thing. So it took me around 2 years. Before I could finally do it full time. And like I say, I've been doing it full time now for, I think, just over 3 years now. So 5 years in total.
Congratulations. That's a fantastic story. I was chatting with my brother-in-law, and I won't tell the full story here because it's very long. He's quite long-winded sometimes. But the point was, it doesn't even matter how much money you make. It's more about the autonomy and time freedom. So probably I would work for a quarter of what I used to make just to wake up when I wanted to, not to work for a boss that I disagreed with, to have the free time, like whenever I wanted, and go on vacation and stuff. So I'm curious your thoughts on that. Cause I mean, it did light a fire under you where you were like, hey, I'm going to show this guy I'm going to earn even more. But does it even matter? Like, what do you think now that you're 3 years in?
Well, for me, it wasn't so much, like I said, the money. I had to earn a set amount to pay my bills. I didn't have any savings in the bank. You know, I had to pay my bills each month. So I wanted that safety net of having, you know, let's say it was $2,000, you know. So he said, okay, well, you know, you don't want to earn $2,000, because what if your website goes down or anything like that? If you can earn on average $3,000 per month for 6 months, I will allow you to quit your job. So he was supportive in doing that. But for me, it was more about being in control of my life, being in control of how much money I made, being in control of what I did. Everybody says you want more family time, you want more freedom. Of course you do. But I wanted to be in control of what I was doing. And like I say, after working 7 years in that company, for them to give me 2 weeks notice, you know, I was just about to be signed off as an area manager, you know, probably on, you know, the equivalent of around $70,000 or $80,000 salary. It was a decent salary, you know. So for them to just put me off is to say, oh, it's been great, thanks very much, there's a brown envelope, you know, you're gone. It was that I wanted to be in control of my life. And I just thought, this industry, and I still do think it, the more hard work you put in, the more dedication, the more learnings you do, the more skills you learn, the more successful you can be. So I wanted that control. I didn't want somebody else to go, I will tell you when you're going to be successful. I'll tell you when you get promoted. I didn't want that. I wanted me to be, if I fail, it's me. If I succeed, it's my hard work. That's what I wanted. Kind of, you know, the self-employed mentality. I've been in and out of self-employment for almost 30 some years, you know, so I wanted that control back again. So yeah, that was the main reason for doing it, really. And I just happened to fall into this niche.
What are some of the other self-employment projects that you worked on in the past?
Right. So when I was younger, I started the first ever mail order company in the UK for aquatic plants. So that was a tropical, if you have a tropical fish tank and you see all the nice plants in there. I used to import the plants from Singapore, and then they used to come into our local airport. I used to pick them up, take them to my warehouse. We laid them in holding tanks. We then people purchase orders and we'd pack the plants up individually, put them in parcels, send them out. And I was one of the first people to ever do that magazine style. So Doug, you know, now this was an actual physical article in a magazine and the back of newspaper. You know, when you used to open the back of the newspaper and at the back there'd be some dodgy advert, you know, for, you know, you probably know what for. I was kind of in there going, plants for your fish tank. And it took off incredibly well. I was really successful for a couple of years. But then the exchange rate from Singapore to the British pound crashed so bad. It was literally like, to give you an example, if I was picking up a box of plants that cost £1,000 one week and I was doing really well, making lots of profit, I just suddenly turned up to the airport and it was like £9,000. And I was like, what? It was just the exchange rate. Singapore, the economy had crashed. It was chaos. I tried riding the storm for a few months, but I just couldn't bankroll it because I was turning over $1 million a year. So I couldn't bankroll that. I really couldn't. So I went from that. I then learned to be an electronic engineer. So I learned how to fix TVs and radios, and I opened a couple of shops. I did that. And then I've also owned a snooker club. I've owned a snooker club with a sports bar in it, and I did that. But fortunately, the recession hit on that in 2010. We had a big recession here from 2010 to about 2012. And we were right in the thick of that. So, yeah, that's it. But I've always been entrepreneurial. Always, you know, the corporate job was, I just had to pay the bills. I was never, ever going to stick there. I hated it. I hate it. All the corporate jobs I've ever had. I say corporate, you know, you talk about restaurant managers, supermarket manager. You know, they're not sort of kind of office-based jobs, but yeah, I was never going to do that for the rest of my life.
Got it. Yeah. And did you have a specific interest in each one of the different businesses that you had? So did you have like a saltwater fish tank and then you were a snooker player? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the tropical fish business, yeah, 100%. It was my hobby. I remember that job. I was 16 and I went to a tropical fish shop where I lived and I said, I want a job. And she got one. I went the next day, I want a job. And I went in for almost 6 months until the owner said, you're in here every day. I might as well give you a job. And he did. And within 18 months, I was running the place. And then within 24 months, I'd quit that job and started my own.
Got it. Man, that's pretty cool. Yeah. So it's definitely a trait that you have, something in your personality. Now, I know probably, you know, running those other physical businesses, when you got onto the business model of like working online, there's no inventory. Yep. Maybe you don't have to have a staff. Your expenses are super low. And I suspect that was one of the big attractions and kind of a throwaway question because I know the answer is yeah. Like it's a good business model, especially when you contrast it. But do you have anything to add to that?
No, absolutely. I mean, I'm always wanting to start new businesses, you know, and where I live is a very touristy town. Everybody knows I'm from York, which is like, I think it's like the second most popular tourist destination in the UK. I could quite easily open some sort of business, a retail business. It's really funny. I've got a craze on cheesecake. Ask me why. I just absolutely love it. I was in Gran Canaria a couple of weeks ago. We were testing out all the cheesecake shops there. And I was like, I'm going back to York. I'm going to open a cheesecake store. But you know, you look at the rents, the rates, the insurance, the gas, electric, water, staff. It's just stupid how much it costs you in this region to open the doors of a store. I mean, the rent is astronomical. It really, really is. So, you know, I would estimate to open any type of store in York City Centre, I would estimate it's probably going to be around £3,000 to £4,000 a week to open the door. That's scary. I mean, you know, imagine through COVID when everything's shut down, you still got to pay the rent. It just, you know, it scares the life out of me. As much as I would want to do it, I love products. I love providing them. I love the customer service. I love all that, but it scares me. The overheads would scare me to death. It's, you know, with this business now, I've scaled my business and I've recently reduced my business, but you know, you have that freedom to do that. You know, things are going great. You hire more writers, you get more assistants. It's fantastic, but you can scale that back just as quick. You can say, you know, unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, in, you know, 6 weeks, I'm going to have to let you go. You know, you can do that. So it is very flexible. Yeah, definitely.
So before we get into the meat of today, which is sort of the state of the industry, the things that you've seen change, one answer that you gave before, which I think people probably know this, but they didn't put it together completely. So you found our friend, Alex Cooper, right? You learned from him initially, and now you're a business partner. You're a co-creator of the popcorn theme, right? So can you talk about how that came about? How did that make you feel, right? Because you kind of came out of nowhere, and then you're partnering with a person that you learned from initially.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I say, two projects, you know, like I say, the Philip Garin and the popcorn theme have been incredible for me to get involved with. And I think I've been very lucky that I've built kind of a brand around my name, basically around me. I've never promised anything to people. I've never said, you know, join my YouTube channel and you're going to learn the world's best SEO techniques or anything like that. It's just basically, I do this every day as a job. And I know there's a lot of people would love to do what I do for a job. And if I can just share and show what I do, if it takes their fancy or they think they might like to try it, then they can do, you know, and I'll offer help and advice. So I think I've got a decent enough name in the industry that, you know, Carl doesn't overpromise. He just shares his knowledge. That's all he does, you know. And I think that helped me to get on the popcorn team. And I think it also helped me launch Philip Garin because of kind of my brand and awareness. People kind of know who I am. So I think that has really helped. You know, you say people need to build a brand. Some niches and some industries, I don't think it's necessary, but certainly it's helped me to kind of get where I am now. And it's definitely helped me start projects like, you know, popcorn theme.
So we're going to talk about the state of the industry. You have been working full-time in sort of affiliate marketing, niche sites, content websites, SEO in general. And it's only been about 3 years, but there have been some actually pretty massive changes, right? And I think like if you look at any 3 year period, someone could say that. And they would probably think that theirs was the most sort of filled with churn, right? But I think maybe you have a good argument. So can you talk like broadly, and you could focus wherever you want, just how have things changed from like the first website that you showed your wife? To the sites, maybe the most recent site that you're building and your approach to building a site these days?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you listen to the noise, apparently we shouldn't be having this conversation, you know, a year since AI came out, because apparently, you know, it was all going to end and, you know, we shouldn't even be here now talking about websites because, you know, it was all over. So yeah, I've seen so many changes. And, you know, when you sent some of the notes over about today's stream and saying kind of the future of our industry, who really knows? I mean, we're absolutely guessing, because I'll tell you now, if you'd have asked me 2 years ago, which is a short period of time in this industry, if you'd have asked me 2 years ago, would we have all this AI technology and stuff? I'd have said you're dreaming. I'd have said you'd be watching too much Terminator and Arnold Schwarzenegger or something. You know, I'd have said, don't be silly. You know, then that came along and then everybody said, it's all ending. It's all going to be over, you know, and then people are saying, actually, it's the best time to be in our industry because I couldn't write very good blog post before, and now I can press a button and I can get reasonable content out. So, you know, you'll hear so many ups and downs, and you will definitely see them if you stay in this industry long enough. I think, you know, it's definitely a long game rather than a short game. I say that with numbers. I'm a big kind of data geek. I love actually testing things, and everybody always says, you know, my traffic's up today and down today and stuff. And you just got to zoom out a little bit and just have a look and see what's going on kind of long term, because, you know, if all this AI technology scares you off now, then it's not the right industry for you. You know, you've got to take notice of it. You've got to either embrace it or reject it. Either way, you've got to look into it. And I think there'll be so many more changes to come. I mean, we've barely touched the iceberg. Yeah, I listened to Neil Patel the other day, and he was saying, you know, if you think all this AI technology is amazing and stuff, you haven't seen nothing yet. I mean, it's going to be ridiculous in 10 years' time. You know, it'll be totally different.
Right. Well, personally, how are you using some of the AI tools these days, if you are?
Yeah, I mean, I use, obviously I used kind of ChatGPT when it came out, and then GPT. I use Koala a lot, koala.sh. So we all call it Koala Writer. I use that quite a bit at the moment. We're using it as, you know, and I'll get this over to so everybody knows exactly where I stand on AI content. We use it as a first draft, as simple as that. we do not pull a keyword into it and let it spew out 2,000 words and click publish. Nowhere near that at all. We basically use it for searching for ideas and outlines, and we'll get that first draft copy and then we'll chop it all up. Sometimes we take all the words out of it. We just leave the subheadings that it's found. We do that, and then it goes off to human writers. We still have a team of human writers, and they then take over from that, and they'll go, this is absolute garbage what you sent me, Carl. I'm going to start at scratch. Fair enough. Or some will go, wow, I didn't know that subheading links to that. Actually, it does. It makes sense. You know, so we kind of just go from that. We also use it for images. So I'm a big fan at the moment of using AI images. And that's, I think that's really unique. I do have a big passion for creating unique content, and especially in my niches now. So I've sold all my websites down, and I just have two travel websites now that I am focusing on. I'd say my whole business is kind of four categories. I have my websites, my affiliate marketing, I have the popcorn theme, and I have affiliate gathering. So they're kind of the four things. I've shrunk down my website portfolio just so that, for two reasons, really. Number one, I needed some funds. Whatever's going on in the industry, all this AI chatter and all that, I needed to make sure I had some funds there to make sure if I don't jump on the wave, can I ride it a little bit? Can I fend it off? You know, I need to be financially okay for a while. As all that settled down, I then realized, okay, I need to focus on a couple of sites. I focused on two travel sites. So I'm now looking at real articles, and somebody pulled me about this the other day. I'm trying to write real articles where I kind of go to a hotel. I will review it. I will take images. I will do a YouTube video for it. And then, you know, I'll link to booking.com or something and make a commission. So I'm trying to do that real content. And I said that the other day, and somebody said, oh, so for the past few years, you haven't done real content. I was like, you know what I mean? I mean, how many people actually go buy the product and physically review it, go to the destination and physically do it. So yes, I've written articles before on places that I've not visited, but I've done the best research I can. Is it still valuable? Yes. Is it still helpful? Yes. Is it unique? Maybe. But, you know, I'm trying to get more unique content where I can, but you have to be realistic. You can't do that on every article you publish, but I am enjoying that more. And I do think it's something I'm going to try and focus on a lot more.
It's hard to compete with that too. I mean,
yeah.
Even if someone uses the most sophisticated version of whatever AI tool, they can't compete with you shooting a YouTube video where you're talking to do you do like a talking head type video, or you're walking around and it's your real thoughts, right?
Yep. Yeah. 100%. I mean, some of the most, to be fair, it was, you know, like I say, it was a conference that we met at. I spoke to a lot of people there that did two things. Firstly, they focused on one website. That the majority of the successful people in there, and we're talking seriously successful, you know, like Anita, you know, doing like $15,000 a day, you know, that kind of success. She said, for 20 years, I've worked on one site. That's it. I don't get the shiny object syndrome. I don't look elsewhere. I've just focused on that. The other people that I've seen that are really, really successful, again, are the ones that have narrowed down on their niche a little bit, but they are doing that extra mile. They are going to the places. They are doing the YouTube videos. They're building a Facebook, Twitter, social brand. You know, a friend of mine has an email list for a travel website. She sends out one email saying, literally all it is, hey, here's the 5 blog posts we posted it. And she gets like 20,000 views within minutes. It's just, you know, it's a powerful model to have. So I want to do that because I enjoy it. I really do enjoy it. And I've recently, I say, been to Gran Canaria, and I actually did some blogs and some reviews about a couple of activities. And there is information in those activities I would never have known. Like one was like, you know, jet skiing or something. And it's like, there's information there that I wouldn't have found from AI. I wouldn't have got anywhere else other than actually doing it. So yeah, and that's why I call it real content. But you have to be realistic. You can't do that all the time, but it is nice when you can do it.
And you mentioned you have a couple sites, if I got that right, two sites in the travel industry. So how are the commissions for the travel industry? Marcus actually asks in the chat here that he heard that booking commissions are a little bit low. So what's your take on that?
There's it's something, again, I'm testing. My middle name should just be Test. Carl Test Broadbent. Because I think there's something going on with the bookings. I don't know what it is. There were a lot of talk on, I think it was TikTok maybe, of people saying, you know, booking companies are holding back commissions. They're not paying people money. It's really strange, because what you can do is you can get 10 bookings and you think you've earned, let's say, $300. And then all of a sudden, it just, the day before they go, they cancel. And it's like really strange. It's like happens a lot. And I'm talking, you know, all the major hotel and travel booking companies. So you've got Expedia, you've got Booking.com, TripAdvisor, you've got all the big companies. So it is a little strange. I do think if you want the best commissions, you have to narrow it down. So you have to be known for something. So, you know, one of my good friends, you know, Emma, who does Emma Cruises, you know, 100% narrowed down on cruises, you know, huge ticket item, great affiliate program. It's absolutely fantastic. Another friend of mine just does hotels. He literally, his videos are just about hotels. That's all it is. Simple content to make, fantastic commissions. You're talking, you know, 20, 30% commissions. And then another friend of mine does flights. And it's really strange. All he does is he hops on a flight and then he flies there and he shows you what he does on the flight. He spends a couple of hours in the airport. He goes to the premium lounges. He shows you the food, if there's any showers you can take. And then he jumps back on the plane and comes back, and that's it. And he gets his videos out. But again, flights are one of the most expensive things we buy regular, and he gets 30% commission from it. So yeah, I mean, commissions for booking in general, you know, is quite slow at the moment, but yeah, it is a really good thing if you can narrow it down and really target in on an audience.
And I don't know if this is what is happening, but I know people that are, they're really sort of, in air quotes, like savvy travelers. They will book something and then they will cancel and they'll rebook the same thing. Maybe they call the hotel directly and they say, hey, I'll book directly with you and if you give me this cheaper price. So that could cause an issue. Do you have any thoughts on that?
100%. That could be it. Yeah, absolutely. The cookie period as well with travel affiliate commissions is really low. I think booking.com is like 24 hours, which is ridiculous because, you know, if I'm searching out for a holiday in Barbados or something, I'm thinking of spending, you know, $7,000 or something. I'm not going to book it like right now this minute. I'm going to go on, I'm going to search about a bit, I'm going to go through my affiliate link, you know, and then maybe next month or the month after, I might book it. So that's one of the bad things, is the cookie period. I think the better one is Expedia. I think they do a 28-day cookie, but it's really strange, Doug. Honestly, I've been posting on Twitter some of the clicks I've got. So for instance, last month, I got 2,700 clicks through Expedia.com and I got 2 bookings. Weird. And, you know, and these are focused articles, you know, best resort for this, best hotel for that, best flight for this. So it's very, very strange how low the bookings are. And it has made me curious, hence the word I said testing, because I am actually tempted to, you know, actually book a couple of small things like really cheap flights or get my friends to do it and just see if those bookings do actually come through. Because, you know, I've reported it to a few of them and said, you know, Get Your Guide is one. I send hundreds and hundreds each month to Get Your Guide. That's the ones who do activities, and no bookings. No bookings for 6 months. They've checked it. They said, yeah, your links are all working. Everything's fine. You're just not directing the right people to the right activity. It's like, what, hundreds and hundreds each month? There must be one person that wants to buy it. It just seems strange, Doug. So yeah.
Yeah.
I've been posting about it on Twitter. I want to test it. I want to see what's happening because I do feel there's something a little bit weird. But, you know, once it's all running and people got the right niche and they are sending the right traffic to the right program, it's very lucrative. It really is.
Very good. Well, and let's go back a little bit to some of the AI topic area. So, and I want to let everyone know in the chat, the folks that are watching live, we're here with Carl Broadbent, the founder of Affiliate Gathering, and we're just talking state of the industry. And earlier you mentioned how you're using AI, and people can rewind if they sort of missed that. But it sounds like you're using it as just a bit of an aid, up front. Do you have any, I hate to use the word prediction, but you talked about listening to Neil Patel recently saying, hey, it's going to be absolutely bananas. We're paraphrasing, of course, but where do you think it's going to head? Because we have heard like the industry is going to change, like SEO is going to not be in existence very soon, but we haven't really seen anything much different. And I do want to, I'm loading a question in here. Trust me. Marcus does say in the chat, hey, is there anything that hasn't changed in the SEO world lately? And he said it as a joke, but the thing is, it's the same shit, right? It's still like good content and links are super important. It's literally the same shit. And if you go back to videos from whatever, 2015 to 2016, when I was first starting on YouTube, it's I could basically like republish the same videos. Hopefully I have better camera equipment now and the sound's better. But I mean, really, it is that. And we're still talking about exactly the same thing. So anyway, what predictions do you have?
No, you're right, Doug. In fact, just before this stream, I was just quickly turned on the telly and I watched a YouTube video that pulled up. I won't say the name of it, but my wife has sat next to me, who kind of don't really, she knows what I do, but she doesn't know the ins and outs of it. And they said something like, here's the, you know, X number of tips. And I said, and I sat there and I went, number one will be Amazon. Number two will be this. And he was literally, and she went, have you watched this? And I said, nope, but I can predict exactly what they're going to say because it hasn't changed. You know, there's, you know, things are done differently. I think things will change in the future. My biggest prediction for the future, like, you know, like, kind of get it out there, what my prediction is. I think two things are going to happen. I think with all the AI, you know, the search and Bard and, you know, SG and all that lot, I think what's going to happen, it's going to be more interactive. I think things are going to get more interactive using AI. So you're going to have a lot more chat bots. You're going to have a lot more questions answered multiple times in search. So if you say, you know, what color is snow? And it goes, here's the answer. This is a lovely article. And then you go, and it goes, snow is white. And you go, but is it white in every country? And I think you're going to be able to have this conversation where it goes, actually, no, some countries have a bit of pollution and it's a little bit gray. And really, where are those countries? And then, you know, it's going to go, well, actually, there's a video on it here I've found for you. Why don't you watch this, Carl? It's going to be kind of like that. And it may even get to the point where, you know, you've got, it's virtual VR. You know, we're looking into headsets where, you know, I search what color is a sand and, you know, it comes up in front of me and, you know, it just, that kind of thing could change. I think the imminent changes will be a lot more video images. I think that's where I think the focus will go. And the reason I think that is because I think Google and, you know, Bing and all the other search engines are going to struggle with controlling what's happening, you know, in their business. I think they're struggling now. I think they're quite honest to say that, you know, AI took them by storm and they had to quickly rethink a lot of their strategies. And I think they're going to have to look at ways of figuring out written content better because, you know, if there's so much AI content coming to the marketplace, then they have to decide who's right, who's the authority, you know, EEAT. We know that. The question is, how are they going to tell that Doug has EEAT? That's the only question is how are they going to determine you know the answers versus me? So I think one of the things I'll turn to is video because, you know, anybody can produce the same article twice on, but it's very difficult to produce the same video twice. So I think they will turn to video a lot more, definitely in search as well.
So one thing, you know, when we were talking about tools earlier, you mentioned Koala, which I never use. There was a lot of hype around it. And I'm always leery when all of a sudden everyone's promoting the same product. I'm like, is it that good? So honestly, when they approached me, I declined because I was like, I'm not going to use the tool. I don't know. But there was a ton of hype around it. And some people really like it.
Do you know what it is, Doug? It's the same with anything. It's a tool. And if I gave you access to my account on Koala, you'll produce rubbish. You just will because you've got to learn how to use it. You know, that's the thing. If you learn how to use the tool, you can get the most out of it. I've given my writers access to it and they've just literally put the keyword and press go. And it's like, no. They've worked on it so much. And this isn't a sales pitch for them. There's hundreds and hundreds of different AI tools. But all I'm getting across is that, you know, if you learn to use them in a constructive way in your business, they can help. Simple as. I mean, I'm doing a big Pinterest campaign at the minute. And it's very, very easy for me to go into that tool and say, give me five click-worthy titles for a Pinterest pin and give me five descriptions and give me the five hashtags needed to rank this in Pinterest. Here's my blog post URL, and boom, it does it. I then put all that information into Canva, into the bulk publishing tool. And before you know it, I can produce 50 pins for Pinterest in 30 minutes. You know, doing it the old school method, I will look at it, do five in 30 minutes, you know, so, and what's wrong with that? You know, there's nothing wrong with doing that, you know, so, you know, using the tools in wisely and correctly, but it's a learning thing. You know, if you do not know how to use it, or you don't take the time to learn how to use it, you know, you've got to jump in the Discord groups. You've got to listen to other people who said, I've spent all day and come up with this prompt that produces the best image possible. It's amazing. You know, you have to listen to them because you haven't got all the time in the world to play around. So, you know, you use other people's time, you know, learn from them and get the most out of it.
Have you used the tool called Claude? That's one that I've come across that's it's very, very good. And I've been using it more than ChatGPT here recently. They do certain things better, but Claude is very strong in writing and content production. So what do you think?
I've not used it, but somebody, I saw a video, somebody recommended it the other day to me, and it was, something I was going to look into. I don't get overwhelmed with everything that's out there. There's, you know, if you try and test every product that's out there, and I just need something that can speed up a few processes. I just need something that can give me an outline. I need something that can produce some Pinterest pin titles, some YouTube descriptions. I mean, it's fantastic. You just drop your YouTube video in. And click, you know, convert to blog post, and it'll take this podcast into written form, you know, word by word without, you know, a minute's trouble. It just does it, you know, so it's great for things like that. So, but you can spend too much time getting bogged down on it. So I just try and stick to one. I got the lifetime deal on it. That's why it's this one. It could have been another one. So like I said, no promotion for that. It could have been any tool. If I'd have got a lifetime deal on it, I'd have probably just stuck to that one and, you know, and learned that one. But, yeah, this is the one I happen to do. And I was interested in using this one because it's created by a blogger. Kind of same as Popcorn thing. We designed, you know, three bloggers designed it for bloggers. So it does what it says on the tin kind of thing. So I thought that writing tool was designed by a blogger. So it would be very specific for bloggers. And it is, you know, whereas, you know, ChatGPT and GPT, you know, they're designed to do not really blogs at all. It's designed for primarily other things. But this is a tool designed for writing blog posts. So that's kind of why I stuck to it.
Cool. And I'll give a plug for Claude, which is currently free. I don't think it's available in all countries. So it may not be useful for everyone, but it'll do all the stuff that you just described. It doesn't have as many, you know, sort of preset things, but you can prompt it. And the big selling point for Claude is it scored. So they tested ChatGPT, I think the version 4, and Claude on the GRE, the graduate school test. And Claude scored like in the 90 some odd percentile for writing and content production. It wasn't as good in the analytics and some of the other maybe reasoning, but it was a very strong writer. So I currently use Claude for, you know, the writing stuff, and I'll use ChatGPT, and I would happily pay for Claude as well. But to your point, people should, you know, focus on a specific tool, learn that, and ignore the noise. Because there's like, I literally get one or two emails a day for some new AI tool. It's all based on OpenAI stuff and ChatGPT, and it's all the same. It's all fucking the same to me. So 100%. It's just noise.
100%. It is, exactly. And you can just get bogged down with it all. And it's just, what do you need from it? That's the thing. Like, just what do you need from this tool? And if you find one that gives you it, and you got it at a good price, and you just use that and just crack on. You know what I mean? But yeah, it's that noise you've got to stay away from. But I found that one helpful. Yeah, I mean, ChatGPT and stuff like that, I've used it a lot. But you said at the beginning, maybe off air, we're saying like a few people are kind of complaining about it and stuff. Now it is. It's obviously, they're going to change their business model, whether it be pricing, whether it be the amount of words you can get out of it. They're playing around with that. So I don't think it's as amazing and productive as it was in the beginning. And I think people are now going to spend more time trying to create amazing prompts and stuff to get more out of it when they're taking it away from you. So that's a time suck. You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, they're taking it away and you're fighting to try and get the most out of it. So that could be a little rabbit hole people go down. So you got to be careful about that.
I want to shift gears. So let's move into working solo. So I think maybe you work with a few contractors or something, but are you a solo operator more or less?
Yeah. So over the years, I've managed to build up a team of writers and have a proofreader and I have a VA. The VA is the latest edition. I think I've been working with him now for around a year. Best thing I've ever done. Absolutely. And when I say VA, it's not for calbrobin.com, it's not for Popcorn Theme or anything like that. It's basically just he controls the websites. So he basically talks to the writers. He asks me for keyword research. I do primarily most of the keyword research. I'll give that to him and then he'll dish the jobs out to the writers. He'll format and edit all the content. It's incredibly specific in details. It's unbelievable. And he'll do all that side of the business. So the websites pretty much run themselves. So I can do the video content for the website. So I'll do the keyword research and the video content as well. And on the video side of it, I have a voiceover. Had a voiceover lady, but she just quits. I've now got a voiceover man. And a video editor. So again, I'll come up with scripts, do the talking head. He'll put all the B-roll in and the music and the transitions, does that side of it. So yeah, I had a lot more writers than I have now. Recently let a lot go after selling a lot of my websites and just narrowed it down to just these two.
How many people total is that currently now that it's trimmed down?
VA editor, about four writers, so about eight or nine.
Okay. And then are you able to share, you don't have to, or do you know your run rate, like your expenses per month, right now?
It depends on me. So my editor, after losing a big affiliate program, which we won't know, probably people will guess what it was, I cut down a lot of my staff and I cut my editor down almost a half and just said, you know, once these websites really pick up, I'll up you back up again kind of thing. So I actually reduced the amount of hours I give them. So I used to do it on keywords. So basically, I used to say to my writers, each one of you has 25 articles/keywords to write each month. That's your amount. And I had that for 12 writers. So I dropped it down to between 4 and 6. The reason I say that, a couple go part-time whenever they feel like it. So I now give them a little bit more freedom because it's a smaller team. I've allowed them, we're using a different method now. So I can't really reveal it here. Hopefully, if it's successful, I will reveal it and let people know. But we're kind of doing a lot of keyword research through social media, using a certain particular social media, and particularly on images. And we managed to find a really unique way of creating blog posts where it's using social media images and kind of got the idea from Tony Hill, who's big on Twitter. He has a massive, massive Pinterest account. He gets something like 1.5 million views from Pinterest to his website every month. And he described it and I figured out what he was saying in the way he described it. So although I'm not going to explain it because I haven't tested it thoroughly, if you check out the video with Tony Hill, just go on YouTube, type Tony Hill, you might figure out what it is. So we're using that. So I've given the writers a little bit more freedom. So rather than say, here's 25 keywords, go off, write those. I'm now just telling them to check this method. And when they see this method and they think it might turn into an article, they just go for it and write it. So my bills are sporadic at the moment. They, you know, it's not extortion. They're never surprised with, like, you know, normally I pay her right £200 and she sends me a £700-800 bill. They're good, sensible people. But, you know, I do get the occasional one that's almost double. But then I'll go to my editor and they'll say, yeah, she's published 40 articles this week. And I'm like, all right, okay, that's why then. So yeah, I wish I could give you more information, but the reason I'm not is because I don't know if it works. And I'm not going to say this is the best method in the world, it's new. And everybody jump on it and waste the time. Yeah. So when I know it works, I'll kind of say what it is. It seems a very simple method. It's different. It's something I'm testing. It seems to work. The first ever article we published using this method went straight to number one and with a small authority site. And I was just blown away. So we did about another 10 straight away. And then the other 10, they got on page one, but they didn't do amazing. So kind of a bit disappointed. But then we've had a couple jump up to number one. So I'm like, okay. So it swings and roundabouts in it. So I'm not convinced at the minute it's a long-term strategy, but some of them work. I'm just trying to figure out why that one's working and why the others aren't. So, yeah.
Got it. I was about to tease you and say, hey, I thought you'd share everything. And here you're like, oh, there's some secret sauce, you know, but you just haven't tested it. And I commend you for that because a lot,
yeah.
I mean, I got burned when I got started because I would follow someone's methods and they're like, actually, I haven't tested it. I'm experimenting right now. And then all of a sudden you wasted like 20 hours and maybe thousands of dollars doing some nonsense that doesn't work. So 100%. After you test it, you'll share it, right?
Yeah, 100%. I'd rather just like say my whole, I'm going to say my life, but my whole career is kind of just sharing what works and what doesn't. So I'd rather just say, hey guys, I found this method and for 6 months we've been doing it and here's the numbers. What do you think? Is it worth the ROI? Is it not? What do you want to do? So I'd rather just do it that way rather than say, you know, I don't want to do one of these YouTube videos. I've just found the best keyword research method in the world and it's free. You know, subscribe to my newsletter. You know, I don't want to be that person. So we'll see. If it works, I'll definitely share it because it's no harm on me. I mean, the industry I'm in, the travel niche is so huge that, you know, unless somebody actually attacks my personal website, scripts it and crawls it, and it, that's a different thing. But you know, just generally, I can share it because it can be used. The method can be used on like any niche at all.
Got it. And I want to go back to another question, which we could just skate past it if you don't want to share. So you said, hey, your expenses vary, but I'm trying to give people an idea of what the expenses might be for someone doing this full time. Can you give a broad range where it's like, here's the low point, here's the high point, maybe over the past year? If you don't want to share it, that is totally okay.
No, it's absolutely fine. At my highest point, and this is where I realized I was kind of getting into, it's like not serious trouble, but you know, a few months of spending this much money, and it could seriously affect me. I have Starling app, you know, on my phone. It's like a banking app, and it gives you a circle of how much money you make, how much money came in, and how much money went out. And I was just sat here randomly. I think this was about 6 months ago, and it said that my outgoings for that month was $15,500, and I was like, "What have I spent $15,500? I can't believe it. I literally itemized everything, and it was right. And like 12 writers each week sending $400-$500 invoices every week, times that by four, times it by 12 another years. And it got astronomical. I think now I'm probably down at around $4,000 a month outgoings at the moment. It can really fluctuate between 3 and 5, about there. It depends how much I push the website. Cause so recently I just purchased a load of Haro links. And I've, you know, really gone all in on kind of backlinks because travel niche, you need authority. You need links. You just do. So I spent nearly £15,000 one month just on Haro links. So, you know, obviously the number there would skew the monthlies, you know, but, yeah, it's an average just content and VAs between 3 and 5.
Okay. Gotcha. And that does give people a pretty good idea. In mine has varied over the years, depending on what I'm doing, from probably around 1500 to 2000 to like 10,000. I don't think generally I crept over 10K like outgoing. I keep things extremely lean and more lean as time goes on, where I'm avoiding like shiny objects and I'm like, all right, I'm going to simplify my tech stack. I'm going to get rid of tools that I don't use. I keep a really close eye on that. I do my own bookkeeping every month. So I know, you know, what's going in and what's going out. So it's easy to see, like, I don't need to keep these domains, right? When you get started, you buy like whatever, 20 domains right away. And you're thinking, hey, I'm going to get to that site at some point. And you never do. So I let those go.
Right? Yeah. There's nothing worse than those recurring PayPal subscriptions where suddenly, you know, $280 come out of your account and it's for a plugin that you haven't used for 4 years or something. It's awful. For all the readers, all your viewers that are listening now, you know, don't let these kind of numbers, you know, 4,000 a month, 5,000 a month. I can scale it down to, I could scale it down to probably $400 a month if I did everything myself, you know, but there's only so much time in the day, isn't there? You know what I mean? I didn't get into this business to work 60, 70 hour weeks. I'd rather spend the money as long as it's coming in. You know, never advise anybody to get into debt. I think I once watched a YouTuber recommended they did some Google ads and stick it on a credit card. I was like, what? you know, so I'd never, ever, you know, advocate that. But you just build and at the level you are, if you know, this is, if you make your first $100 this month, then, you know, you might want to spend $50 and on some content and get somebody else to write some content and have a few days off. So, you know, it's all relative, isn't it, Doug? You know what I mean? So what level you are, you know, so my income from my websites alone is minuscule. I mean, when I talk to some of my friends, you know, who are earning, you know, one grossed 120,000 last month just from a website, one website. And it's like, it's just crazy, you know, but I'm as excited as earning $100 from that. If I launch a new website and $100, that gives me as much excitement as, you know, so it's relative, isn't it?
So how are you able to avoid the shiny objects? Do you have any tips for people to, you know, not see, we all watch YouTube, right? Like we're on YouTube, we watch YouTube, we learn from it. I really watch YouTube more than anything else. So we see videos and it's like, oh, this is the most important thing in the world. Really, it's not. It takes a while to build up the thick skin to realize it's not the most important thing. So do you have any tips for people to stay focused, to work on the thing that they're trying to work on?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the best tip to avoid shiny object syndrome is to do shiny object syndrome for a year or two and then realize that it's ground you down and you've got nowhere. Literally, because that's the end point where you'll go, okay, I'm sick of doing all these different things. Because I've done it. I've done it for 2 years. You know, I've almost been sucked into, you know, the whole Amazon video influencer program at the moment where, you know, you review every object in the world and stick a 30-second video on Amazon and you make thousands of dollars each month. You know, I tried that when it first was launched two years ago, and it just was, you know, can be successful. I'm not saying it can't, but it's just, again, I was just like, that's just another thing to worry about and do each day. And, you know, it was only after, like, say, speaking to really successful people, you know, and I said to them, how have you become so successful? What have you done? And they just say, worked on one project. This is what I've done. You know, I've just worked on one or two projects at the most. You know, I don't do Amazon influencer, YouTube, TikTok videos, several blogs, you know, just so many, you know, balls to keep juggling every day. It becomes a drag. It really does. So yeah, to avoid it, basically just try it. And if you're successful, wow, fantastic, good on you. But I tell you what, there's not many people who try and do several projects at once and become successful at all of them, if not even one of them, because you just find all of them suffer. So for me personally, yeah, I just always go back to the mentality now is, Carl, you've tried it, just stick with your plan, just keep doing. So I think I can only avoid it from experience of falling into the trap in the first place.
It's very stressful too, to have multiple projects going, because I think, unfortunately, we all think that we're a little bit better than average, like, Doug and Carl couldn't pull it off, but I'm a little smarter. I have a better background than them. I'm going to be able to figure it out. You can't. You maybe are better than us, but like you can't focus simultaneously on like multiple things and have them all grow as fast as they could if you just focused on one. But to your point, you have to hit rock bottom and like try all this stuff and then realize, I'm not smarter than everyone else. Sometimes it just takes time to do this shit, which it does. It takes a little while. You mentioned right at the opening that it took about 2 years for you to really get your footing, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was over a year before I earned my first $500, you know what I mean? A month, you know, it was crazy. I was spending every waking moment doing this. You know, I was working really, really hard to make it successful and just really, really struggled. But I mean, at the moment, the thing is, you know, with the, you know, new projects and taking on things like that, our business is very kind of data driven. So yeah, you can look at analytics, can't you? You can look at your daily earnings for your affiliate commissions. If you're trying to run several different projects, you'll be looking at a lot of negativity in those numbers every day. You're not just focusing on one side. Okay, it was down yesterday, but it's up today. You'll be looking at that project's down, that's down, that's down, that's down. Well, that's up, that's down. And it just gets you down mentally. You realize that you can't cope with all that and you just want the successful one. So you have to just strip away a lot of those bad ones and just stick with what's working. You know, if something's working, then, you know, go for it. But I mean, it depends what you're out, you know, what your objectives are, why you're in this industry doing it. If you're looking to make an actual job or career out of it, then, you know, you have to be more strategic about your time and your money. If you're doing it as a hobby, then yeah, play around with, I don't know, Amazon influencer, TikTok affiliate program, you know what I mean? Whatever you want, try and play around with it, have some fun and see what works. But I think when it turns into your business, you really need to start thinking, you know, wait a minute, I put 40 hours in this week. What have I actually done? What have I actually got out of today?
We're coming up towards the end of the time that I scheduled. Carl, are you able to go a little longer today?
Yeah, absolutely fine. Yeah, I'm loving it. Yeah, I'm enjoying it. Like I say, it's been a while since I've spoken to anybody in our industry. So obviously I'm going to speak to Alex and Phil and my partner in, you know, Philip Gabrin. But yeah, to have a chat like this is great. Yeah, I'm happy to go on.
Awesome. Let's talk about working with others a little bit. So you alluded to the popcorn theme where you partnered with Phil and Alex to get that going. And then you're running, I think you're the sole owner, the founder of Affiliate Gathering, but you have a team that works with you. So what can you share about working with others, whether it's the small team with Popcorn or maybe a larger team over on
Affiliate Gathering? Yeah. I mean, with Popcorn, yeah, I'm an equal partner with Alex and Phil. With Affiliate Gathering, I do have a business partner in that, an experienced event organizer. The whole reason the event match literally took shape and happened because of her. So, yes, I have a partner in that. I'm pretty good with working with people. What I'm not really good at is kind of the hard, tough conversations. You know, if there's something we're doing I don't like, do shy away a little bit. I was quite ruthless when I was actually working for a big corporation, but when it's your own, I'm a little less ruthless. I like to be the nice person in the room. I need to probably deal with that situation a little bit better. But I tend to have a tipping point. You know, if there's something that's really grating on me, I will go like, hey, right, let's sit down and discuss this because I'm not happy. I will do that. But, you know, these partnerships are quite young. The Affiliate Gatherings, the next one will be year three. Popcorn Theme's only been around for around 2 years. And Touchwood, yeah, the Popcorn team, we've worked really well together. We have a weekly video call and we pretty much message each other every single day. The Affiliate Gathering isn't as intense all year, but it gets to a point where there's 6 months where we literally live and breathe it and we're in each other's pockets and houses every day. But I've no sort of kind of big experience with personally working with a team out of my own, you know, like partners.
Got it. Well, you and Alex and Phil, you're all nice guys. So it's probably a good team to work on.
I think maybe a bit too nice. we're finding a bit of a balance now because I'm becoming known as the tight Yorkshire man. Where I come from, Yorkshire, England, are known as the tight people. You know, we have the flat caps. We, you know, we live off cups of tea. You know, we, you know, feed our ferrets scraps of bread off the table. You know, we're kind of that. So I am becoming the one that's a little bit tight. So if somebody's in the chat going, hey, can I have the Popcorn Theme for a discount? You know, Alex is the one that's so nice to everybody. Alex is always the one that'll say, yeah, sure. And I'm going, whoa, wait a minute. So I think I'm getting known as the tight one. So, and Phil just keeps his head down and develops the theme. He just literally, he's fantastic.
When you guys first partnered up, did you have a very clear delineation of what your roles were and how you were going to divide all the work?
No. and pretty much it still hasn't really happened. Basically what it was is Phil was always going to be the developer and take care of all the technical stuff. Me and Alice was going to do the sales, the promotion, the outreach. Through our audiences. And that's kind of how it is at the moment. Which kind of changing Popcorn Theme to like a yearly subscription model now rather than a lifetime one-off deal. So that's had a lot of technicalities to sort out through like WooCommerce and payments and stuff like that. Alex is very good at that because he's run multiple companies, you know, in the past in London and stuff. And he's dealt with a lot of big companies that use that kind of payment method. So he'd been really good at setting that up. I tend to be, like I say, a lot more of the marketing side of it, promotion, marketing and stuff like that. But yeah, I think eventually we will get kind of a role. At the minute, it's just three mates kind of, you know, on a chat, on a conference call, one of us is always either preoccupied doing something else even while we're on the call. But yeah, we will find that balance. But it's worked for 2 years. So at the minute, yeah, it's working.
As a former project manager, that makes me very uncomfortable. Like, you gotta, that would be the first thing. Because I'm like, oh, you don't want to. The worst thing is if you duplicate work where you both did the same thing, you both feel like you wasted time. And, you know, at least Phil, who's in the chat there, he's like, I'm coding. Like, they market it. I'm doing the coding.
Yeah, just leave me alone. I'm doing the coding. Just leave me alone.
but at the same time, like, I mean, because you're all, like, you know what you're getting into. You know that it's not clearly defined and there will be some perhaps little missteps along the way. But at the same time, yeah, like I said, it makes me extremely uncomfortable. That's like number one.
I actually knew it would, because I know your background. Like I said, I know you're so, you know, professional, well-organized, and I know you like structure. And I knew that would freak you out.
Yeah. It's either you duplicate work or you miss something. It's like, oh, I thought you were going to do it. I thought you were going to do it. But anyway, you guys are making it work, and
We tend to just answer emails twice. That's the thing. Yeah, that's it. We need to, even just the email side, but we need to get down to it. We have put things in place now. So there is now tools inside the back end where people are assigned jobs and tasks. So each week I'll have a certain role, and then Alex will have a certain role. So we are getting better at that.
Great.
We are learning. But yeah, from day one, like you say, we didn't sit down and say, right, you are, you know, CEO of the company, you're at marketing, you know, we didn't do any of that. It was just literally like, let's just get this thing launched. Let's just get it going. It's brilliant. You know, helped so many people. Let's just do it.
That's awesome. So yeah, people, you can do anything. You know, you don't have to be super organized or anything like that. All right. We got a couple questions that I want to hit here. So we have one from Misty Sunday. When going after shiny objects, why not go after simple niche websites and grow them to a point where you could flip them at X price? So sounds like a simple concept, right? Carl, why is this not going to work?
I've done that. In fact, you know, I've done it reasonably successfully. I've in the last 3 years, I think I've built 20 websites and I've got 2 left. So you can see how many I've flipped. And it is a good strategy for cash flow. It is a really good strategy for cash flow. But again, you'll just spread yourself too thin. You know, to have any knowledge on a certain topic to get a reasonable amount of content out, you're going to have to spend some time researching that. So you will definitely spread yourself thin. I'm not saying it can't work. You could build, say, 4 websites and grow them for 6 months, let them sit, and then flip them for, you know, $5,000 each. And yeah, you can do that if that's your one business model. But if you're trying to do that, and then you're trying to do a YouTube channel, and you're trying to do Amazon influencer program, you're trying to do TikTok, then it gets chaotic. But if that is your business model, which I know for some people, I think Shauna Newman is a great case for that. Shauna builds websites and flips them. She doesn't keep them. She gets them to about $50,000, $60,000 and then flips them. And I asked her why she did that. And she said, because it's a great cash flow, so I can travel all year. Well, that's what she does. But that's her business model. You know, she's not all over TikTok. She's not all over other things. So yeah, you can do it. You just got to focus to it.
And Sean is a great example. She'll actually be joining me, I think, in a couple weeks or so on one of these live streams. So if you're not subscribed to this channel, please do so. And Carl, you have a YouTube channel too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, literally from day one, I started filming my journey. It's horrible to watch. If anybody is wanting to start a YouTube channel and they, you know, they're worried about their content or anything like that, just go back and watch any YouTuber's first 5 videos. They're horrendous. But I just basically said the same. I was like, hey, I want to make some money online. I'm going to basically share with you what I do, whether it works or not. And I had lots of failures, lots and lots and lots of failures. And I think that really helped me build my audience, because it's like Cal doesn't just show all the successes, he shows failures. I mean, I had what I call a mega website where I put almost $30,000 into content, and it didn't even get off the ground. I mean, it hardly got crawled. It was just an absolute flop. I pulled it back a little bit, but you know, we're talking, I'd be making $500 a month and I put $30,000 into it. So yeah, basically my channel is me sharing what I do. You know, if you want to be an affiliate marketer, you want to be a YouTuber, whatever you want to do, you know, I just share what I'm doing, and if it helps you, then great. I don't kind of, you know, have a sales pitch or anything. It's just me every day. In fact, I've even done a day in the life for 30 days where I literally just, wherever I went, I turned the camera and I just spoke. I mean, some days it was me, I don't know, like the dentist or something. it's just ridiculous. But I just wanted to show how honest you can be. You can just turn the camera on and just say what you got to say. You know, some people like it, some people won't, but it's up to them. They can unsubscribe if they don't like it.
So your channel is linked in the title of this, so people can indeed go check it out. And like I said, you mentioned Shauna earlier. She's going to join me in a few weeks here, so people do subscribe. We have a question that ties back to the answer that you just gave. So Shanza says, what are possible problems if a website isn't getting any traffic, even if the blog and overall website is SEO optimized and guest posts are being done? And we'll both answer this. So Carl, what things might you look at? You talked about a site that you put like 30 grand into and it didn't really do much. So what things should people look at?
There's obviously the technical side of it. There can be something that's just actually, you know, not holding the website back. So you'd rule out all the normal technical things on the website that it is set to crawl. And, you know, that's the most important thing. Can Google crawl your site? That's literally it. You know, the menu set up to the point where Google can come on your site, crawl it, easily find your content. It's not buried deep under lots of clicks. So there's the technical side of it you can look at. The other thing you can look at is the topic and the content that you're putting on there. Look in your Google Search Console, see what's getting the impressions, and then maybe you can focus just on that topic for a little bit to see if that trend continues. And if it does, you can continue to write content around that. Create yourself a little silo, a little, you know, bucket of content. You maybe you're spreading yourself too thin, which was the problem on that mega site. It was, I don't think I ever revealed the niche. Maybe I didn't. I don't think I did. I think I sold it and then, so I didn't reveal it. But let's just say it was sport and I was covering football, cricket, tennis, golf. So I thought that was a niche and I thought it was narrowed down enough to, and I was writing about everything. You know, just Google was just crawling it going, wait a minute, 1 minute is football, 1 minute is cricket, 1 minute is golf. It just didn't know what to do. So I, technically wise, I could have split that site down into what was working and offloaded a lot of the content and siloed it down into, let's say, golf was working and just focused on that. So I would suggest if this lady in the content she's putting on there, have a look at what is getting the impressions. And if it's a case of everything's getting the impressions, but not getting the clicks, and look at your titles, you know, look at your meta descriptions, look at your titles, see if you could attract more clicks like that. It depends. It's really hard because it could be a super competitive niche. It could be a really easy niche. It's very difficult. Start with the technical things first. Get somebody to do maybe a site audit if she's unsure how to do that. You know, for like $49, you can get some really good site audits. Make sure you've got all the technical stuff in place. I believe in WordPress is that literally is a button it's the button of doom. And if it's ticked, it just will not index any of your posts. I remember Alex doing a video saying, like, have you got the button of doom pressed? And, you know, it could simply be that. Who knows? You know, your site might not be generated. So look at the technical stuff first. And when you rule that out and it's specifically about content, then look at the impressions. See what is getting the impressions and what's not.
Cool. And I'll just add a couple other basic things. Those are great, Carl. Agree with them 100%. Typically, people don't give it enough time. So is it 6 weeks? Is it 6 months? Has it been 2 years? We really don't know. Usually when I get this question, it's like a month or two and people just haven't given it enough time. Yeah. So it can take longer. It could take a year, right? But you should hopefully start seeing some impressions. The other thing is people will swear up and down that is SEO optimized and that is high quality content. And then I read it and it's really bad. Yeah. It's very bad. And sometimes they wrote it themselves. Sometimes they hired a company to do it and the company didn't produce good content. Maybe they're a horrible writer personally. I'm not saying you are, Shanzi, but sometimes people just can't edit their own work and they don't know what high quality content is. The other thing you mentioned, you're getting guest posts. If you're paying a service to do the guest post, chances are it's fucking terrible. I'll be honest with you. Even some of the best ones even some very good companies that have a good reputation, they're mostly content mills. I'm sorry to be the one to break it to you, but they're content mills. And I, again, these are even good companies that are recommended by folks that we know. And I've recommended them sometimes, and sometimes they're high quality. Sometimes you can go look at a handful of posts and it's just random different guest posts. And they're publishing like dozens of them a day. So there's a good chance if you're getting low quality guest posts, they're not helping at all. There's a small chance it could be hurting your website, but mine are people just not being informed that they have bad content, they have bad links, and they're literally like wasting time and throwing money away. So Carl, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, two points there. With the backlinks and things like that, relevancy is the key. You know, if you've got a gardening website and you're getting a link on, you know, a health website or something like that, you just got to make sure the relevancy is there. That's the number one thing. Then obviously you can look at the background of the site, look at the traffic, if it's a nice, steady, gentle increase, or if suddenly traffic's exploded or decreased, it's a warning sign. So it's very, very easy. And there's loads of good videos out there to show you the warning signs for the backlinks that you're potentially going to get. With content, I look at it in a really old fashioned way, and it alludes a little bit to, like, say, this new method that we are testing on the two travel sites, because they are built totally different. One's very SEO optimized, keyword research standard procedures. One is totally different. It's very much kind of story led and more entertaining led content. So you need to bear that in mind with that lady's, that blog. Think very old school, like a shopkeeper. When somebody walks through your door, or in our terms, lands on your website, why are they there? What is the purpose of them being there? And if they've landed on your article, they've landed on it for a reason. You have to, in the first line, even three lines, you have to satisfy that that is going to give them what they need. It has to say, reassure them, hey, Doug, you came to this website because you're looking for the best spade to dig your garden. You know, 100% I've got it. I've tried 20 of them, and honest, 19 are total garbage. This is the one you're going to need. Let me explain why, Doug. You've got to satisfy that in the first paragraph. So even if she's worried that the content generally, say 2,000 words, isn't great, get that first paragraph perfect.
Awesome. Well, I do respect your time, Carl, and I appreciate you joining me here. So we'll wrap it up, probably go another 10 minutes or so here. You have, I guess, done two affiliate gatherings so far. You have another one scheduled, right? So what changes are you going to do for this next one, or what could people expect if they attend? Is it next May 2024?
Yeah, we always try and do one every year. We learn from each year. I mean, conferences to us, you know, the lady I'm in partnership with, she's run some big successful conferences, but for me, they're quite new, and this niche to her is quite new. So every year we learn. We learn about the type of speakers we have. We learn about the workshops. So last year we had a lot more workshops. You know, year one, people said it was great. It was a little bit fluffy, lovely stories. I loved it, but I want more workshops. I want to get more out of it. So we crammed all these workshops in, and, you know, we went kind of triple the amount of workshops, but we got the timing wrong on a little bit of them. So we can learn so much to make sure everybody gets the best out of it. The number one thing about the affiliate gathering is, and people need to bear this in mind, it's not an SEO conference. You know, it is a place to meet people who do what we do every day. You know, where can you go tomorrow? Can you walk out your door and go meet 10 guys who have a travel website? You know what I mean? You just can't. So ours is very much about bringing the community together and getting people, you know, to swap contact details, talk to each other in an environment where the information shared is trusted, and it's, you know, people do open up a little bit more, you know, and they are willing to share a little bit more because, you know, they can see a face, you know, rather than somebody, you know, emailing you going, hey, tell me all your secrets, you know, it's there. If we're face to face, I'm more likely to tell you some more detail about my business when we're face to face than I would in on an email. So it's just a great place for people to get a little bit of reassurance and some learnings, some support. And have a little bit of fun as well. You know, it's it can be a very stressful industry. I know we say, you know, we quit our corporate jobs to have a very stress-free life and stuff, but, you know, when there's Google updates and AI chatter and everything, it can get a little bit stressful. So it's a nice little outlet, you know, to actually get a bit of reassurance that, you know, you're either doing the right things or, you know, maybe you need to change a little bit. But yeah, there's a lot of support at this event.
So with the workshops, what kind of stuff would people expect to learn? It sounds like those are supposed to be really actionable, right?
Yeah, 100%. I said, so this one's a really good example. So we had Jen Stanbrook, who's a Pinterest specialist. She has a very successful like furniture and home decor kind of website, and she is a master at Pinterest. So she run a full Pinterest course for half an hour. We had Ben from Ben's Watch Club, who's a YouTuber, very, very successful YouTuber. He's got like 250,000 subscribers, something like that. His videos are world-class, absolutely brilliant. He was there explaining, showing you the difference between here's a video, here's a good video, and he's showing you the differences. So literally like, I see what you mean. Yeah, fantastic. We had Odys were there, O-D-Y-S. They were there showing you the difference with using an aged domain and how you can power up your domain using backlinks. We had that. We had content writers there. It's just, yeah, the workshops are kind of 20, 30 minute workshops where, yeah, you'll walk away with some actionable, you know, advice. So the workshops are very interactive. We do film them. So if you don't get to see them on the day, you can watch them back when you get home. On stage is more kind of experiences. So again, you'll learn something, but they share a lot more of their personal experiences and how they got to where they are and what they did. And yeah, so on stage is usually very quite inspirational, but as well as some learnings as well. We had Caroline Shelby there, who's, you know, I rate her as probably in the top 10 people in the world for SEO, and she was there. So, you know, some of the stuff she taught us and talked about, you know, she's inside Google, you know, she's literally lives and breathes that company and knows them all. And, you know, it's fantastic to hear what she's got to say. So yeah, there's something for everybody, right from how to write a blog post, right up to the best SEO tips.
And it's always about the relationship building, like all this stuff that you mentioned, that's great. But, you know, I'm going to a conference coming up in just about, I don't know, it's in October. I'm like, when is it? Yeah, it's like 2 months away. Actually, Jamie IF was in the crowd. I'm going to meet him here coming up in October, but it's called FinCon. And yep. I honestly skip most of the talks unless I personally know the people that are there, because I don't want to sit around in like a talk all day long. I want to chat with the people. Usually I'll sneak off, take a nap. It gets some late nights, and I think Affiliate Gathering is quite well known. I think you guys party really hard before the stuff, which seems I can't do that anymore. I would lose my voice. I would literally have to just say, I'm not talking, which I have started to do. But yeah, what's the deal with the partying before you get started? It makes it so hard to stay awake, man.
York is a very tempting place to come. It's full of, you'd love it, Doug, because it is, I think it's got more micro and home breweries than any other town in England. York Brewery is a famous one. It's so many. So the beer is really, really, really strong. And I think, yeah, it's a real party kind of vibe. So we do fringe events run by people. So not particularly Affiliate Gathering. We help them secure the venues. But like, if let's say you was coming over, you could hold, you know, a fringe meetup for your community. So they'll go, Doug's there. It's a nice cafe. It's a bar. It's a restaurant, whatever. And Doug's going to have 30 of his community there. So they sell tickets and all their community comes together. But ends up usually everybody congregates on one venue at the end, and then it goes on late into the night. I usually visit as many as I can, but I usually bow out around 10 o'clock because we have to set the venue up at like 5 or 6 a.m. the next day. So I usually bow out. But yeah, there's a few people who've got caught. Jamie IF is one of them. So yeah, Jamie was on stage and he literally walked on and he did a fantastic presentation, don't get me wrong. And he probably had one of the best catch lines I've ever heard. And he literally just kept saying, do you like money? Literally, all he kept saying, it was It was so funny. It was, he literally said to me, I don't even know if I can walk on stage. I'm not over. But he presented fantastically and, you know, some really valuable stuff. But yeah, that stuck with me. But like you were saying, it's the conversations. Sean Mars, I don't know, have you ever had Sean Mars on your channel?
I have not, no.
Sean's been around the block, you know, since the time of niche websites. He's done Black Hat, Grey Hat, everything. And Sean gave me the best compliment ever after, I think it was the year one. I said, what have you taken away? Have you learned anything? He said, first 5 minutes I stepped foot into the foyer of the hotel, I met somebody who's just started building websites and just doing blogging and keyword research. He said he's only been doing it about a year. And he said, and he's just given me the best keyword research tip I've ever come across. I've never even thought about it. He said, and that's a newbie. I've been doing this 15 years, 20 years, and he's just blown me away by it. And that was a 5 minute conversation in the corridor with the first person I bumped into. And amazing. I was like, that's it. That's exactly it, Sean. He was like, you know, kudos to you. Well done. That's exactly the event we want, where people just chat, meet, talk, share. And that's kind of what it is. That's why it's called the affiliate gathering. It's a gathering of friends. It's not called affiliate SEO or gathering SEO. It's called the affiliate gathering, where affiliates just gather and chat.
Very cool. We do have one more question. And the thing is, I was going to say, there's so much support in the chat for affiliate gathering. Everyone that I've talked to absolutely loves it. And they say, I'm coming the next year. I'm coming the next year.
Right.
Wonderful reputation. And okay, so this is going to be a tough question. We'll humor it a little bit. So Matt says, how do you see AI in 5 years? How do you imagine your average workday when you have ChatGPT-6 at your disposal? Smiley emoji after that. So I'll answer first really quickly to give Carl a chance to catch his breath here. So I am very bad at predicting, but I think it will, in 2 years, it's either going to be really close to what it is now, just incrementally better, or there's a chance in maybe a year or 18 months or whatever, anytime between now and 5 years, there's another leap in something that we did not expect, because we haven't seen it before. It's like a shift in the paradigm overall, kind of like we did with ChatGPT. It went from kind of a really a mediocre product with Jasper, right? Which was, to my knowledge, was powered similarly, like under the hood with, it was not very good as far as producing content, even though a lot of people said, it's really good. You could really massage it. And you could if you learned how to use the tool, like you mentioned. So for me, I think it's either going to be just about the same as now, like we're hearing that it's going to get better and better, which I think it will. But the timelines are like, it's just so skewed. And we as humans can't estimate like exponential growth very well. So like, or compound growth or anything like that. So I don't really know. The other thing is, for me personally, I have shifted my work from being very busy and focusing on like, hey, I'm going to build 20 websites and I'm going to try to outsmart everyone, to really focusing on a few things that I really enjoy. And through my focus over the years and whittling down projects, I'm working just on the stuff that I really enjoy for a very short amount of time. And I am not working very much at all. So I probably will focus on the things that only I could do, because then there's very little competition, right? So one thing you didn't mention specifically, Carl, but it's inherent with focusing on one thing, kind of like you're doing with affiliate gathering. I know you have other projects, but your timeline is very long. You're like, hey, I'm going to keep doing this for several years, I assume, right? You don't have to launch a website and then be successful in 6 months or even 18 months. You're launching a conference. There's not as much competition, but if you stick with it, you're going to have like the biggest conference in our space with a really good reputation, because you're trying to improve it along the way. So you don't even care about the timeline so much. You're like, all right, we're going to do it once per year. And you could do that with a YouTube channel or a podcast, even a blog or a newsletter or whatever you want to focus on, or social media. But I'm sticking in my lane overall, and the stuff that I'm focusing on, podcast and YouTube, and I've developed skills that I could like transfer over to other industries, but they serve me well, like right where I'm at now. So I don't think AI is going to impact me directly from my day to day. That much different than now, I don't think.
Yeah, I think people asking that sort of question, though, are, in my opinion, worried about the wrong things, because, you know, you're worried about something that hasn't happened. I would embrace what you can control and what you have now, because, you know, if you're worried about what's going to happen in 5 years and trying to predict it and try to go down that path, you could be totally wrong. You might hit the jackpot and you might get it right. And I could say, Doug, everything's going to be video content. You know, you could switch 90% of your business model to video content only. And then I get it wrong. It's VR technology. You know what I mean? You're like, Carl, you said 5 years ago, you know, it's going to be in video. What we know is working right now. That's what we need to focus on. So we have AI at a certain level. And like I say, it's a tiny level compared to what it might be. But again, it's what it might be. But right now we have AI that's working, you know, this level. So let's just use that or focus on that or deal with what we can deal with right now, because, you know, we can't worry about the future. That's in the future. We're here and now. Your blog is here and now. Your YouTube channel's here and now. So just work on that now. Let the other people, the bigger people who develop all this, let them worry about what's happening in the future. For now, you know, I know I can use AI to help do something, some task in my business. And that's what I'm going to use right now, because that's all I've got available. You know, if you want to predict it, you know, if you want to go crazy and stuff. I did see a video once recently about a professor who was saying the time we need to get worried about AI, I know this is very Terminator and all that lot, is when the AI starts dictating what we do each day. You know, so when we say, yeah, I want 20 keywords for this, and he goes, no. Actually, you want to look at this. This is really good, and I'll do this. And I've been talking to Jasper AI and, you know, and Koala actually isn't doing that. You know, when he gets to that, then it's like, you know, then we're fighting the machine.
Yeah, and we're like blindly following. Yeah, exactly. Okay, we do have one more question that is relevant that I forgot from before. So Marcus asked about the end of third-party cookies. So Carl, do you have any takes on that?
Yeah, I mean, as an impact in our business, it's going to definitely impact our business. There was all sorts of talks about revenue shares, whether it cut it down 50%, 30%. We have a lot of data. Trust me, you know, Google companies, they have a lot of data about their audience already. So yeah, it's going to affect us on, you know, ad revenue and the way we track sales and the customers that landed on our website. But we've been gathering data for years and years and years. And you know, there's many search engines that haven't used, you know, third-party cookies for years already, and they're still doing very good. So, you know, again, it's kind of out of our control, and the level that we're at, then yes, you know, it can affect, you know, ad revenue shares and all sorts. But, you know, like I say, it's not the end of our industry, or, you know, for that reason, we're not able to track the ads correctly and the customers. You know, again, something to worry about. Do you want to worry about it, or do you don't want to crack on and, you know, get pushing and get working? So, but it definitely has an effect. Ad revenue share has definitely gone down, and it will do if they totally lose that ability. But, you know, it's not something, when I heard about it, when it first came out, you know, talking to Mediavine and Zoic and stuff, they were saying like it could be 30, 50% drop. I was just like, well, if it is, just need to publish more content. There's not all I can do about it. I can't change it, can I?
Yeah, and I like that take. I don't worry about it too much. Honestly, if it'll get rid of the cookie acceptance little banners that fuck up every website that I go to, I'm like, I'm going to accept it. Like, you don't let me opt out. So it's like either I accept it or I just don't go to the website, which many times I'm just like, if I don't need it, I'm not going to go to the website. I'm out. Yeah. Stuff outside of my control, I'm very good at just ignoring it and not paying attention. And I think we have been talking about cookies for about 3 years or so, and I have yet to explore anything that I need to do about it. Because there's probably nothing there's no action I'm going to take that'll change
Yeah, like I say, you know, we can worry about everything. You can worry about AI, you can worry about cookies. I could just get on and start doing stuff, you know. So I would rather get on and make a YouTube video, or I'd rather publish a blog post than worry about, you know, where AI is going to be in 5 years' time, you know. So yeah. Like I said, deal with the present. Stay, you know, I'll say stay in the moment, stay in the present, and just, you know, work on what you've got available right now.
Carl, thanks for joining me today. It's been a really fun conversation. Where should people find you?
Yeah, over on calbrodman.com is my blog, but I'm mainly over on YouTube. Again, just search Carl Brodman in YouTube, you'll find me. Drop a comment. Always read the comments and reply to as many as I can. So yeah, you can usually get in touch with me there. I've ventured onto Twitter. If you're a big Twitter fan, or X now as it's changed, you can go on there. But yeah, one of those platforms, you'll get me.
Perfect. All right, we'll talk to you soon, and thanks a lot.
Thanks, Doug. It's been great.